educated person to some degree. I've had a lot of chances in life, and certainly in the New Age system, I learned that it's my responsibility what I think and everything, and I learned to view things like that. But the majority of people do not have that option, although they have the beauty about them when you observe them on the subway system, as I did on Saturday when I was travelling for about 3 hours on the subway system. They've got beautiful qualities and everything, and yet they're made to be zombies by the government. And that's why I listened to Mr. Icke, because when I did, because he seemed to be offering a way out for people, a way where they could take their power and they could see what was being done to them. Whilst I agree with Eliza's point very much, I also absolutely have witnessed what Juan said and what Dr. Carolyn said. And I've also witnessed during my studies how a lot of alternative doctors and people who try to make a difference and who may not be medically qualified, they may just be chiropractors or, they're not trained in the system of medicine, they have been eliminated in the America. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been some years where about seven people have all been killed, you know, one when they were jogging, one when they were doing something else, and for sheer spite, you know, for no good reason, just simply because they're trying to help. So there's some force that's definitely against people becoming out of slavery of the mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would, Cha, I want to point out, you said the cliche. People need to be educated. They need better education. The problem today is they have too much education when you look around at all the information services and all the different media. If you're looking, you think they need to maybe have a book education or some course on a book along the lines of book, then you're missing all the other media. So McLuhan would say, Baudrillard said this, people are over-informed. There's too many choices, too much conflicting information. So how do you bring that into balance? So when you hear someone saying people aren't educated, no, they need a certain kind of education, certain specialists. And, well, I won't say specialists, certain unique view, which is what we provide, yet we're just another fly in the noise, unless we aren't, according to Ion. We are very effective. But for me to say that we got the answers, and we have a lot more answers than a lot of other people have in many ways, that turns people off because they want a role to be an educator. See, you've got from your local masseuse to your local rotary guy to the mayor to, the person who runs the Maui Cultural Center. Everybody values the information they're giving out, the service, the media mix they have. So there's an incredible amount of wealth, you know, beyond anything they've ever experienced before in any culture. So it's an inhuman scale of wealth, and seeing through that is the health that you're hoping people would get. It's a matter of perception.
That's a very thank you very much for explaining that, because that's a point I totally hadn't considered about the filtering of the information and being swamped with information. In fact, blurs any valid information and neutralizes it because of the sheer volume of it. I think that's what I hear you saying, which I hadn't considered.
Media. Yes. The variety of media. See, there's where you... Would you agree with me that you looked at books as good information and that there are all these people who don't read, so we need to get them into a place where they will read a little bit these good books? Is that what
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I thought I was fortunate to have attended a lot of workshops run by dynamic people who trained you over a weekend or over a series of weekends to view things differently. or over a series of years.
Okay, so you're saying these people don't have much income, welfare people. If they were given access to David Icke or other workshops that are very expensive for them, that would be a good service? That would be useful?
Well, that's what I thought at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But because it was different. It was a different way. It was only through that method that I began to take responsibility for myself, although I think one of the most influential methods I did discover was after my late mother died. She was an alcoholic, and the therapist, who was paid for by the bank where I was working, refused to take me and discuss things with me, although she was happy to. She'd been an alcoholic herself. She said, unless you attend 12-step meetings on adult children of alcoholics, I can't see you. And when I went to those meetings, I think that's when I really started to, some of the dross started to fall away from me, because that was when I encountered all walks of society in a small room who were discussing with absolute frankness and honesty their issues, which were very carefully channeled along the 12-step line. And one of the first things I learned was you could not interrupt anybody who was talking, so that if somebody was talking, you just sat there and listened. And actually, it was one of the things that forced you to focus, because you, during that period of that 1 hour or the 2 hours, whatever it was, you could only listen or talk, but you couldn't watch any, and you couldn't have a mobile phone or any other input. You know, there were no books, there was nothing. It was just a dark room. And that actually, when I left those meetings, I would, although I often had tears just running out of my eyes at simply hearing other people who shared the same experience, when that happened, I used to feel a tremendous lightness. And people who were, as if I'd been to a church or I'd been worshipping or, you know, was terribly happy in some way. But people who I've met on the New Age circuit said, "What's happened to you, Char? You look much better." And I think it was simply because that was a very effective way of removing people's blocks. And one of the most noticeable participants in these meetings were visiting Americans. The visiting Americans were far more honest, far more fresh, and whatever their experiences, they really embraced the chance to transform and come into their own power. It was very noticeable that the Americans, when they do things in a far dynamic way.
Well, that's their kinetic bias. Their kinetic manipulatory bias is what McLuhan defined.
What does that mean?
They move people out of their space. They take over the space. They walk into the room and kind of emanate some kind of kinetic vibe. Kinetic is your movement center, your gesture. So that's why Americans, they say, are anti-intellectual. They didn't have the literate book world of the printing press, the first part of the Gutenberg galaxy, that Europe had. So Europe developed some refined sensibilities with the eye. And then these Europeans go over to North America, and they're just, you know, chopping wood, very physical, and then they're maybe inventing tools, a lot of extending of their kinetic muscles, in the most general term. Then they get into their machinery, which are levers and pulleys in the 19th century. So the kinetic, this is why America is the land of dances. pop culture is mainly dances. That's a kinetic art. So I was with these Japanese about 10 years, 15 years ago, and they decided to tell me that they find Americans violent. They're way more violent. So I defined it in kinetic terms. I said, no, they just like flexing their muscles, or they have a visual space bubble around them. If you see them as movement addicts, got to be on the move all the time and using their limbs. When I laid that out, they got a big insight. Because they're Zen, they're Japanese, they're tactile. Zen culture is tactile. They live in the interval, so they have a different kind of sensitivity. And when I translated the cliche violence into sensory terms, they got a big insight about it. They sort of stopped their moralistic judgment of the American. They looked at the American differently.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Because the Japanese are very, as a society, they're very much more aware of one another. And they're brought up in school to, help one another very much. And their tradition
reminds me of the kinetic bias. The American kinetic bias, because it's wedded to the eye, they actually have a very abrupt relationship to machinery. So they bang, hammer, nail, twist, bend, fix their cars. They're good at it, but it's actually, they're not very good at tactile sensitivity. You get the Clint Eastwood archetype, the tough sheriff guy who can come in and, kill everybody, get a fast arm, and take over and bring peace to the town, get rid of the gangsters. But he's like a lone, detached guy who could hardly have any emotional aestheticism in his life. Emotional refinery. That's the disservice of a kinetic visual bias. And the Japanese are very almost aesthetes of the interval of being sensitive to people.
But they've got some of the most violent fighters among their culture. If you think of
you mean the sumo, you mean the judo and sumo wrestling?
No, I don't mean controlled. I mean the gangsters and the criminal element, and also in the military. For example, kamikaze fighters or
well, you
fighters
know what that would be?
For the Pacific Islands in World War II.
Right. So as the Asian sensitive tactile agents take on kinetic industry and visual bias, and they become literate, they become very violent at it, extreme at it, because they're new at it. So the aggressive individual and the gangs are people losing their Japanese because they're acquiring other cultural modalities from other technologies.
So are you saying that in every kinetic or agility or whatever the category is, the culture goes from a kind of baby-like experience of being clumsy and develops gradually through the stages to becoming more mature. Is that what I'm hearing?
I wouldn't call it mature, but they become where the technology molds them. So the individualist, hard-nosed, independent, won't take welfare archetype of the American citizen is very good at being numb to people or to be sensitive. That's why McLuhan said you need alcohol in American culture to turn an average American citizen into a reasonably social. Now, this is applying to the World War II and earlier generations. That's what McLuhan was talking about. The Generation X and the Millennials are something different because they have a different media mix, but now you take a very tribally involved Iroquois Indian, and the involvement in loosening up of alcohol will drive them nuts because they're already loose and sensitive to interpersonal acoustic resonance. But the literate, detached billiard ball mind of an average white American is so rigid they need alcohol to become social. Alcohol doesn't... it has a service for people. Of course, then it gets out of hand, but it's interesting why alcohol is important in American society.
Yes. It offers a kind of freedom. Well, all tablets and alcohol and stuff get you out of the box.
Freedom is getting you out of your sensory bias.
Yes, your box.
Your tough kinetic in billiard ball in the eyeball self it has to be loosened up, and that's considered being liberated. So you do that through alcohol.
Or drugs.
I mean, it's amazing.
Apparently.
Every TV show that I'm watching, everybody's always taking a break and drinking wine or something. A lot of scenes are in bars or in someone's home, and they're always giving each other a drink.
Well, they
it's
can't,
ridiculous.
They can't show them taking drugs, which is...
Right. See? Now, that's what's interesting is... but now you have a whole different generation. We're now got a Generation Xers are 40 and 50 years old. They're taking over management positions. They're going to turn the whole thing into legalized marijuana. You know, that's where the sensibility in the long run couldn't be held. So if you were an anti-drug person, like a Clint Eastwood image, I'm just talking about his image, that kind of person in the 60s, 70s who were really against drugs and was putting them in jail, they'd be shocked at where society had gotten to right now.
Would it be very
if they legalized marijuana, if they legalized marijuana, it wouldn't be such a bad thing because people need that. Some people
yeah,
are
but
so
see, you're,
rigid.
You don't put in good and bad. It would be a useful thing because most people are right hemisphere people now. They're not the Clint Eastwood types anymore. So they've been massaged by the media environment to be a different kind of person.
Well, I wouldn't want to go on an aircraft with a pilot who was taking marijuana because he would put all the passengers at risk, or she.
Well, a younger pilot would be able to hold their not liquor, hold their dope.
Yeah.
They may
be
able to do it. Yeah, you're putting one cliche.
I don't know about
projection.
It. Because I've never
taken drugs. Right, you have not met these cool young pilots that probably have to toke up to be a good pilot. There'd be those types. I mean, musicians all have to take drugs to perform. What?
Would you prefer your pilot drunk or stoned?
Well, the guy who's
the
young guy who's
surgeon,
he's good at it. It depends on how good they are. I'm talking about someone who's a good dope consumer who actually needs it to be, good on their job.
Yes.
So
there weren't pilots like that 20 years ago, probably, you know, but now there would be.
But what's your view, Bob, on what a meat sack body takes in, either drugs or pharmaceuticals or food or sugar or alcohol? How much does Ion say, for example? Well, sorry, we're not to discuss that. But what I'm trying to say is, if a meat sack body is basic biology, and Dr. Carolyn would say total biology when you consider the person's thought patterns and habit patterns or I'm not quite sure about total biology, but what I'm trying to get to is what is the boundary or what are the differences between meat sack bodies that ingest different forms of nutrition or narcotics or alcohol? And artificial intelligence.
I think Ion would say that...
we didn't hear her question. She just got to the difference.
I did realize. She knew.
I heard the word intelligence. Well, what's the other part?
Artificial intelligence. You know, because...
You mean the robot?
You know,
the robot?
When we watch Star Wars, you know, we see bodies that aren't... meat sacks that aren't functioning... are adapted with, they're adapted by say paralysis might be adapted with a special robotic arm or, that kind of thing. And all these different things take us away from the pure meat sack body. But has there ever been a pure meat sack body and system of meat, system of bodies? Because after
probably
all, whatever you take in is impacted on all your different bodies, isn't it?
Your food is a medium that shapes you.
Well, look, that's where we're ascending. We're gods, and gods don't need drugs. They don't need artificial limbs. We'll regrow everything. So we don't even have to think about all that anymore. We just keep being gods.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, how are you doing? How's that working for you? What have you done for yourself?
Who have you raised from the dead today?
Yeah, who have you raised from the dead this week?
Well, that's another point.
That's another point. Don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, but Carolyn, you're missing the other point. Hey, Chuck, I got to say this. That thing when we had the Ayn comment on the futurists, the German futurists, Ayn was saying people are going to become cyborg more and more. And adapting to that is the identity crisis. So we're not going to transcend the way you're saying.
Well,
you have to look at that. You have to ask Ayn if that's what.
They are, but maybe I am.
No, you've got to check that. You've got to ask Ayn about cyborg point, because they said all that technology the futurists was talking about was inevitable, and your adjustment to it was the ascension, was your issue.
Well, that's what we're doing anyway all the time with adjusting to the radiation and the drugs and the foods and the negative words that everybody speaks.
See, we
us.
Don't have to ascend. We just have to take our products.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, Bob, who were the cyborgs? Was that the little man or ascending people? People on the drops. Is there a distinction?
That's right. That's why that needs to be argued or discussed with Ayn more. Needs to be more words need to be said about that, more questions, more objections, just see what Ayn says. But everybody predicted that we would become, you know, two-thirds metal. I don't think they mean a rod of steel. You would have metallic elements, chemicals. So you have to find out, what do they mean in two-thirds metal? Is that like the mercury of the Terminator? What do you call that stuff? The quicksilver that he melts into? Is that metallic? Anyways, we are going to be adopting and eating technologies maybe very different from what we think they are now, in our general future. Don't know if that's for the little man or the ascended.
Well, one thing that I think is so wonderful about Ayndom, or about the future, which we're part of as it unfolds, is the fact that all beings are included in this. I mean, Ayn has no compunction about saying if a person is totally human or whatever,
a vampire
or whatever their actual origin, they are included in the mix. And in a strange way, the populations that we're talking about, ourselves included, where we have a huge menu of options, whether it's in the media or in books or in foods or in nutrition or whatever, we are alcohol or drugs, the huge conglomerates that are behind, well, usually behind, although there are specialist firms behind the production of these, the manufacture and distribution of these items, they could be any kind of form of being, which I wasn't aware of until I listened to the kindergarten stage of Ayndom, in other words, David Icke or somebody who discusses and introduces the options that are available to society in the form of their meat sack body or spiritual aspect if they're just present but not actually in the flesh, so to speak. it's absolutely the choice. The menu is absolutely huge, and the fragmentation as cultures break up and are redistributed among different continents, especially in Europe. We have in London, we have multicultures all operating here, usually within their own little culture. It's a bit like I've got lost. I'm lost. You see, this is why back to Joanne's point with Dr. Carolyn about the medication of the population. That is pursued with absolute rigor in this country. The moment you're on a list of, if you have to go to, if for example, I had blood flying out of my ear about, I don't know, 6 months ago when it was badly blocked, I was downloaded onto the system. Since when I've been notified that I must have flu vaccinations, I must do this, I must do that, I must have this, and almost threatening, you know. So everybody is kind of like, everybody is brainwashed, literally, to take part in this system.
Okay, brainwashed, think of it as other media coming at you and sideswipe you that you're not perceptually aware of. Before you had the problem, you didn't know that you could get bombarded by the health department saying you got to do this, you got to do that. You didn't know that environment.
No,
and so
I didn't.
You're not brainwashed. You're just made aware of another factor that muddles up your life, your chemical body life.
And I think if you get sucked into it, I think that's what I'm about to say is the essence of what I heard Joanne saying to Dr. Carolyn, is that you go down a rabbit hole, and not only in that rabbit hole are all the government with their new car regulation, but all the pharmaceuticals, all the pharmaceutical conglomerates who are pushing their drugs via the medical schools and the training of the doctors. The only unusual element in the UK, where I live, is that the royal family had always had homeopathy and had insisted on that being part of the National Health Service. So there are certain areas, like at University College Hospital, where there is a rare specialist who might give you homeopathy if you preferred it as an alternative.
Well, that, you know, when you didn't know where you were thinking, you didn't get to some point, that's normal. Joyce did the same thing in Finney's Wake. He gave up. He stopped writing. I don't know where, this is too complicated. So he didn't even finish the sentence. But then it does cycle back to the front of the book at another level, but he aestheticized it. But it was appropriate that he couldn't finish. You actually can't think your way through this situation.
Well, maybe he then stopped writing but continued kinetically.
Kinetically what, walking around?
Well, you described kinetic as the way I heard it this evening, or this morning it is here, as more of an influence coming out of the being.
Okay, so how would he, what do you understand he would do if he went kinetic?
Well, I would say if a person with very powerful energy came into a place like Findhorn, which is where they do alternative trainings,
yeah,
weekends and things, immediately one of the first things they do is when anybody joins a group or starts, they hold hands in a circle, and the most experienced person in the group can identify the different energies of the people assembled there, and will react or respond accordingly. And so if a person there appeared to be like Mr. Joyce, who had stopped writing, they would sense his amazing conscientiousness, attention to detail, persistence, and all his qualities, which would then kind of energize the group invisibly.
Maybe. That would be proprioceptive, not kinetic.
Oh. What's the difference then between the two precisely?
Well, proprioception is your inner balancing system. Also, I might call your autonomic systems and maybe your chakra, whatever other parts of yourself that are non-visually sensitive, I would say they're inner kinetic or proprioceptive. So McLuhan had different terms. He had haptic, proprioceptive for the non-ear, non-kinetic, non-eye, these other senses.
So he acknowledged that. I'm surprised that he got that far.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. No, he, when you take your hands, one of the early New Age things was you put your two hands and make a ball between them, you know, an empty space.
Yes.
And then you feel the feeling between your hands. Now, a visually kinetic billiard ball kind of people don't have that sensitivity. So it's shocking to start to feel this energy they can't see between their hands, right? So McLuhan knew that's what tactility was, the energy in the space. So he had, you know, that kind of sensibility from the get-go.
Well, the Asians, the voice had that.
Right.
In the martial arts.
And that's, yeah, now that's why he understood television was tactile. I mean, just if remember in the old days, you put your hand up near the screen, you could feel the static coming off the screen. So you could feel the energy coming off the screen. But he saw that television wasn't just eye, just wasn't just ear, wasn't just motion. There was another factor that went right into your guts, which are your proprioceptive areas. And so he had the sensory refinement to notice the sensory refinement of television.
Hmm. That's very, very thorough of him to...
Right.
To,
and it's interesting, when I communicate about tactility, I'm meaning that. And because you've never heard what I... Well, that word and those ideas, that's how far we are from each other. You've got a whole range of stuff, and you are thinking McLuhan wasn't some kind of tactile or proprioceptive that you knew about. You thought he wasn't. And that's the amount of, you know, lack of understanding of McLuhan. He didn't know that that's what he was an expert in. And that's how he saw TV being. So that's why there's endless conversation. Because each one of us bring a whole baggage of assumptions based on all kinds of different experience aligned with different words. It takes a long time to hear what you're saying. And it just as much takes a long time for you to hear what I'm saying. That's why dialogue, that's why McLuhan said conversation's the most fun. It's the easiest thing to do if you're paying attention to it and you can contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
So look at the way we're having a conversation now. Look at the media dynamics of all the newspapers, the televisions, the bulldozers, the steamships, all the inventions increasingly being sensitized so that eventually a world of maybe you call it artificial intelligence will be a world miming the subtlety and freedom of conversation.
Well, this is something I have come across, because when I went on the expeditions with Dr. Stephen Greer, who was teaching people how to relate to extraterrestrials or people from our future or whatever their name is to whoever's listening, he explained how the craft would not be the craft that they flew in would not be at all like with gasoline or petrol or whatever form. it was flown by people's thought interacting. So your intention to, you know, if he used a laser beam to point into the sky to a certain constellation or whatever, or towards a certain craft that might be moving there, then after very almost instantaneously there would be a blip and the craft would flash back a light, or it might suddenly expand in size massively, the light, so that it was even obvious to somebody like myself. And then it might zigzag around or do anything. And he explained how that was done. You could just with thought, you can all these things happen just in a flash, literally, or probably even before you think it probably happens. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
No, that's enough. I understand. What would be the sensory components of that thought? What would be the machines that responded to it? What would they be like? I think he's talking about what I was saying. A conversation is thought.
Exactly. What I'm trying to fish out of the pond on my fishing line is the fact that you indicated, or at least I thought I heard you say, that McLuhan said that machinery and even large things would respond to thought or to whatever.
And to word, so or to word. Electronic signaling,
yes.
That's as flexible as words.
I mean, and that's what this gentleman was saying, not McLuhan, Dr. Greer was saying about the
Yeah, I know who you mean. I experienced him once in his going outside to look at the UFOs.
Yes.
Two points here. So what is thought? If you're a literate person, thought is some abstract thing. You don't put it into the power of your words. People don't think of speech as thought. They say there's thought and then there's speech. So one of McLuhan's points is to intertwine thought and speech, make them less separate, and then technologies will come that interplay of thought and speech. That's the perceptual part, I'd say, when you talk per thought. And I don't know if Greer would understand that.
Well, leaving him aside, I'm thinking again of healers, because I worked in a hospital for about 8 years as a volunteer after work. I witnessed all sorts of unusual things that happened to patients in their, you know, in the way, with for no apparent reason, they would recover from something very serious. And I studied a lot of things, and one of the things that was quite interesting was back to what you said about proprioception and how certain people in the West might be very surprised. You use the word shock, but I'm using the word surprise deliberately, at the effects of what you call intention or thought or a conversation, but done remotely without actual words, whereby you can literally raise people from the dead. And that is, that I've seen with, eyes being made to function again when they couldn't see, or Chinese healers who can light up lamp bulbs with their own proprioceptive energy, if that's what you call it, just charging it. I've seen when I did martial arts training, I did Tai Chi, not Tai Chi, I did Qigong for 4 years with Master Lam. Once on a weekend, one of his senior pupils from Denmark was trying to catch me, And he showed me that something he said he wouldn't be allowed to show, and that was, he showed it on another man, that he just literally put his hand up and he imprinted his hand onto this other person's skin remotely, you know, from a few feet, and made it literally go really, really red with the heat of it. It almost burnt it. I've seen things that aren't in the current range of health benefits that are offered to the population through pharmaceuticals or through the government and the people they give contracts to. So,
right, so they massage the interval. That would be quite tactile. Maybe
what does that mean? Massage
tactile?
The interval. No, massage
yes.
the interval.
Well,
could
you
break
you
that down?
Up,
yes.
When you put your hands in a bowl shape, they're not touching, but they're facing each other, and you sort of pretend there's a ball of energy between your two hands. You know,
yes.
you know, you do that.
Yes.
That space, that empty space that you're massaging a little bit with your hands or moving, that's the tactile space. That's the interval. It hasn't any apparent qualities. You know, visual man would say it's empty. That's the shock for when one begins to get a new age circuit, when you say, oh, there's a feeling in the empty space between my hands. That's a shocker for visual and kinetic people. They're kind of cut off to that kind of sensitivity. All right? So that space that you can't see but you can feel is close to tactile, because the tactile, you know, rigorously defined, is not a sense. It's the interplay of the senses, but not a sense itself.
Hmm. Well, if you think of the aura or the electrical field around a person,
yeah, that would be an emanation of tactility. Approximate may not.
But that whereas the meat sack stops, the emanation is still there. So I'm
right.
not sure that
so
there is an interval.
No, there's an interval. Matter of fact, I just started talking about that lately, the gap, the important, where everything was in the gap between the physical and the non-physical. That was
well,
a new thought.
That's been known for generations, in particular in India.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I am not saying they're original, but they are bringing together thinkings from all the crumbs and then adding something new to it, because reality has changed. Maybe tactility has changed. Here's a side point. One of Stephen Greer's main colleagues that he did his workshop with, they contacted us yesterday and asked for help.
Oh, really? Was that
yeah.
the doctor, the female doctor?
I won't say who it is.
No, because she's delightful. She's very loyal to him and very sweet.
What's a female doctor? Like what? Is that someone?
Well, she was somebody. He had been in charge of an emergency ward.
Yeah.
And she also had been an emergency physician in charge of a group of physicians under her.
No, that's not that. It's not that.
Not her. It would be a young man then, very well muscled, if it's the same one.
No, it's
Florida.
The woman. The woman.
Oh,
the woman.
Another woman. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he
Stop
would only.
Don't. Stop.
He don't right. say anything, because he would
yes.
only. He would only select somebody he really trusted if something like if it was important.
Right.
So please don't reveal it.
But like
please
many
don't.
Life.
That's
many,
it's pushing his
hey,
life.
Hey, hey, okay, hey, shut up. Child, listen. Like many
I wasn't shut
life
up,
coaches,
I was brought up.
Yeah, brought up. Listen to this. Many life coaches, many therapists are in trouble themselves today. That's a sign that the world energies are changing, and nobody has a solution for that except for us in our products.
Actually, I was just thinking that. I think there should be a 12 steps for
for healers.
Yeah, for the old healers.
Everybody that I do summits and seminars with, the person that interviews me does know about magnesium. They've all had their health journey. I can't imagine that they're totally healed because they're not yet on RNA reset. And I don't know if I showed Bob this, but someone just wrote to Ginny yesterday, you know, through customer service, and I'll just quickly go through it. And it's a female. She says, I was so far down I could hardly get out of a chair without forcing myself, and even then the pain in my joints was almost unbearable, and I have a high pain threshold. The pain was all over my body. It seems all foods affect me. So, in fact, the only time I had little pain is if I don't eat at all. Feeling particularly bad on the first day of drinking the Restructure shake, I really was ready to give up. Within 6 hours of drinking my first shake, the pain subsided, along with my vision clarity coming back, and being bright is the only way I can describe it. Now, 3 days in, I have hope, and I'm not hurting in my body. I've tried other shakes under the advice of natural nutritionists that always made me cough immediately, my first sign of intolerance, and then heat through my body, and ultimately elimination within a few hours, hence leaving me drained and magnesium deficient along with others. I myself am a qualified blah, 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 but not practicing because I feel such a hypocrite as I couldn't find the missing link in my own health. So how can I ethically help anyone else, just my own values and views, with just my own values and views? If using this protocol gives me my own integrity back, I can actually see a life ahead. So I say from the bottom of my heart, Dr. Dean, thank you. So that's a person in integrity who's, I mean, it's amazing, yes, how quickly she's, her body's able to respond. And I think we do that because a lot of people, you know, when they, well, how can you get better in a day or two? Well, I think a lot of people, they're already on a certain protocol. They've been doing everything but our stuff. So when our stuff comes along, it just connects all the missing pieces.
It's like tactility. Mm-hmm. It makes it coherent, brings all the parts together.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
But this is where the healing community is. They are unwell themselves.
Because magnesium deficiency is a plague. It's just not been noticed that that's the main missing thing in everybody's vegetarian or whatever they do diet.
Yeah.
But the thing is, most vegetarians crave sugar. And sugar, 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 the only thing that stops sugar is magnesium. That is the one. Sugar is number one.
You agree with that,
thing.
Carol?
The vegetarians,
the
only way they can
sugar.
Tolerate.
No, no. I'm asking, Carol, does sugar craving get stopped by a good magnesium?
Yes. Okay. And the reason why vegetarians and vegans go become sugarholics is because they have such a bland diet. They're told, well, you know, all this raw fruit is good for you, so they overdo it. But anyway, back to the whole nutritional thing. There's so many of these self-styled practitioners now, and a lot of them are getting into testing because they're not well. They keep looking for a reason. They didn't create REMAG, so they don't want to get involved with REMAG even if they know about it because they can't make any money off it. So they're promoting all this testing, genetic testing, and all the rest of it, and just giving people more reasons to, you know, to believe they're ill. And
I've been through all that, Dr. Dean. I've been down to 9% body fat with all this kind of thing in the hands of nutritionists who are all taking huge cuts for every product they recommend from big so-called natural health product people. You know, they get a commission every time they sell something to you.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely terrifying because people think by leaving the kind of system that Juan was talking about and joining an alternative system that they are going to get healthy. They think if they read Andreas Maritz and become vegetarian and eat no meat, they will purify themselves and they will get better, and they find that doesn't work. Or at least, you know. It's very complicated.
But and then it isn't. It isn't once you come to realize, you know, the mineral, the basis of mineral deficiency, and it becomes very simple. It's minerals and yeast overgrowth.
It's such a shame if they know about REMAG and the other minerals that they refuse to take it because they don't want to say, oh, that's what I took to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to alter their practices. We put everybody out of work. We would put everybody out of work. And that's why Ayn says we'll become the gold standard. Because they're not going to be able to stop it.
The architecture of the future does concern me, I have to say, about how people will be able to, if people have no work and nothing else works, how are people going to pay for this gold standard? How are they going to have...
Well, maybe they won't be charged.
Maybe it will be a community, a different community.
Maybe they won't be charged. Then they'll have their coal play. They got free energy.
Yes. I mean, I hate to sort of recycle back to a certain person who I've already mentioned twice today, but that person was giving out a big reward for anybody that would produce a free energy method that could then be spread across the world.
Yeah, that's Stephen Greer.
He
was offering that.
Yes. But it always...
Well, we'll get that. We're going to get
resistance.
That award. Then. We're going to get it.
It always meets with resistance.
What does?
Well...
What meets with resistance? What's your noun?
Well... there are the conglomerates behind the oil.
Oh, you're just talking about the establishment. It's not just the allopathic establishment. It's now the alternative establishment is a big resistance to what Carolyn's offering. The alternative is the homeopaths, the masseuses, the Bach flower people, the vegetarians, the acupuncturists, the Reiki. The whole gang of them. They used to think, oh, Carolyn's one of us, but when they actually hear what she says, they're going to say, uh-oh, she ain't one of us anymore.
Well, I don't think so. I think there's so much information. I don't think that unless the person actually takes the products and like that very beautiful...
What do you mean
letter,
so much information? There's very little information.
No, but you mentioned... I'm sorry, I apologize, but I disagree because I think that just as you said that...
Are you talking about us? When you say there's so much information, you're talking about Ayn?
No. I'll start again.
Oh, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors out there that people can't find us.
But the moment they find
I don't even
the
mean that. I mean, just as you pointed out to me when I fell into the trap of saying education would help, and then you rigorously pointed out so that I can now see what you mean about everything being swamped with so much information, as McLuhan said, I think in the same way that people cannot, it's a bit like being a gold prospector. It's sifting through a lot of dust in a lot of dross in a river or wherever they pan for gold. Even if they had Dr. Dean's gold glistening in their sieve or what they were panning, they still might not spot it. You know, they still might not they might not. They might think, oh, it's just another bit of
drug. Well, we're supposed to worry about them that miss us?
No, we don't have
to worry about them.
But when you pointed out that challenge, if a person was taking it and they got to the stage where they wrote to Ginny, that is a breakthrough. But to get the person to that stage, even if it's on offer everywhere, will encounter all the person's previous programming
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that will not have that programming.
We get hundreds of emails and calls a day, hundreds. We have 6 customer service people. We are totally engaged with supporting people with having a question. But we, you know, if they don't take the product, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to get the benefit. So,
I know.
They're very strict with people. It's like, anyway. So we're engaged with answering the questions.
So, Carolyn, to bring it back to McLuhan,
yeah.
When you really start to see the difference between the electric world and the print world, and then the Android meme and the electric world, and then you look at the strange environments that people live in, and it's massaging their ideas, their emotions, and matter, then obviously we're in a position now where something completely strange shows up. Just like people fantasize in the previous degrees of strangeness in the 80s and 90s that some UFO would show up. Well, you have to say logically something has to show up to match the strangeness of the makeup of people's environments today. And we're that strangeness. It's totally obvious why this would happen. When you understand McLuhan more and more about what goes on and concepts of matter and physics and big ideas change due to new media, we have such a strange media mix today with the 5 bodies that some new kind of matter, frequency, environment comes out of that. And that's what we are. So it's logical for this to happen. And for people to find it very counterintuitive is the word. They cannot perceive it.
Yeah, and the only way people are going to perceive it is if they engage the products. And it's the same with Ion, same with Bob. Mm-hmm. You have to engage. And we're never going to put an ad on TV and tell everybody, oh, you're going to die unless you take this. It's going
Good.
To be word of mouth and just general information and having customer service. And as soon as they're taking the product and they're feeling better, then they're on their own and we're off to the next load of people. So
I think one thing which highlights to me in my own personal environment the difficulties is, for example, I heard a specific point about a person with a specific blood group being vulnerable and how RNA drops would correct this. And I discussed it with a family member briefly, and I ordered and sent this product to them, and I said, you know, you could take it and your family could take it, just one drop, and it would make a difference. And she just said to me, well, not at the moment, no, I don't. And I can't tell you, it was like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And the other point was that when Michael first told me about the products, I ordered the magnesium, which I knew would be good for me, so I've always had that, and the RNA drops. But when I encountered the gentleman who was on the emails, who was then in charge before the RNA reset company became operational, I couldn't cope with the tone of it. You know, it was too.
Well,
I can't quite explain it.
Got nothing to do with today. I don't even want to talk about it.
No, but that's why, you know, that was my own personal reaction as opposed to response. You know, instead of trusting the person who explained it to me, I became fearful.